man, if we could make work something cool that you're good at doing, put the time in that you need to time and then go home and have your own life. That's kind of what we're looking for, you know, for everybody. So.
All right, Pronouncers, awesome episode. Dan Rue from Commonwealth Press, he's joining us today to talk about how he had the most profitable year working the least. He's a union shop, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, about 14 people, and he's just crushing it. But how? How is he doing that? We really get in deep, and it's through efficiency. He's pumping out more orders by getting more efficient and incentivizing the team to get everyone on the same page. You're going to see how he incentivized the team here on this episode. He shares a lot. So thank you, Dan, for being able to share so much. Now, before we start, though, we've got some awesome sponsors that help us put on this show every single week. Let's jump into it. Multicraft underscore daddy. Guys, you know the drill. Look. Open Instagram on your phone, pull it up, click the message button, and then send Dave. He's got amazing videos. Every time we pull this up, like, this is the best. I love the flannel one. Send him a DM with your email address. He's sending out gifts every single week, including a bunch of PMI tape, which PMI is doing some incredible innovations as well. So that's always really cool to see in the space. Mention the Printable Pod that gets you 10% off your first order with Multicraft. They've been supplying the industry for over 50 years with top brands at competitive pricing.
Bruce, I want to tell you about the best new software platform to hit the industry. It's called DGI Apparel, and it was built by a group of MIT engineers with a background in screen printing. DGI allows you to connect your accounts with Sanmar, Alpha Broder, and SNS, and more to compare prices, inventory, and shipping times across every apparel supplier on one website. That's right. You can go on there, connect all your accounts, and you can even buy like AS color on there, which is pretty cool. The average shop spends 2 hours purchasing every day, and DGI is going to cut that time in half. So ask yourself, what would you do with an extra hour every day? And we don't have a promo code for DGI because DGI is always free for shops to use. That's right. It costs you $0. And if you're not already using it, you're wasting your own time and money. There's over 1,500 other shops already using DGI apparel. So check them out. And this morning, they actually showed us a new feature that will automatically order from your Printavo invoices. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about that or not, but it's like autopilot and it blew my mind. So DGI Apparel, check them out. All right, who we got next, Bruce?
GraphX Source. Steven was just spending a week down in Honduras at one of the GraphX Source offices and was totally blown away. GraphX Source offers industry leading options for your shop. Campus Inc. is what, six or something? Artists handling a lot of production art. Oh, wow. Okay. Seps, mockups. I know you guys are doing online store building there too. They do digitizing, back office admin, and customer service, but they've been around for 40 plus years. I didn't know that, but that's incredible. Mention Printavo Pod 24. That gets you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitize order. Thank you, GraphX.
All right. Bruce, I know you don't have a DTF machine. I do. And one of the struggles of DTF printing is dryers. But this great company called BMAC, that's BMAC Industries, and DTF Superstore are leading and innovating a solution in the DTF printing industry by building a state-of-the-art dryer. It's the top-of-the-line equipment that's manufactured here in the States, and it enhances productivity and quality. I've got one of them in my shop, and they're built like tanks. They have a commitment to excellence. BMAC Industries continues to push the boundaries of what's possible in garment decoration. And they're hosting DTF Expo in Arizona in April. So BMAC, DTF Superstore, DTFExpo.com. Go check them out. Great people over there. And we appreciate them sponsoring the podcast. Thanks so much.
Last but not least, Easy Way. If you're spending hours cleaning screens, that is a thing of the past with Easy Way screen printing and screen cleaning chemicals. Their innovative formulas are designed to work quickly and effectively, so you could spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Spent a bunch of time hanging out with the Easy Way team at Long Beach, and it was awesome. Always a good time with them. Plus, Easy Way is passionate about empowering printers of all skill levels. Their website, easyway.com, an insane amount of resources. So especially if you're just getting, you know, your shop up running, you have different problems, on Reclaim. They've got a lot there to be able to help. So check out their expert advice as they can help you succeed in printing. All right, let's jump into the episode.
Bruce, is that a new AS Color hoodie?
Yeah, slowly adding colors. Slowly adding colors.
Which you got one
Dan
too?
Dan has a staple tee?
If we're talking, this is the staple. If we're talking AS Color, I just want to join in.
I got an AS Color. Is that Tearaway?
Whoa!
Is that Tearaway? So, no, not a Tearaway.
I don't know. I honestly just, you know, Dan, how tall are you?
6'1".
Okay. I think above 6, the little bit extra length is nice and it doesn't shrink up, which is nice too. So I'm not wearing a belly shirt. Win, win, win.
Yeah, and also there's a lot less butt cracks.
Butt cracks?
Just people in the shop, you know, it's like plumber crack, like AS Color eliminates plumber crack.
Yeah, I think we'll let them know. New tagline. Steven, go to cwpress.com real quick and just look at this beautiful website. I'll pull it up. I'll share it real quick too.
There's a disco ball.
Isn't this an awesome shop website? So if you're on audio, take some time, hopefully when you're not driving or whatever you're doing, cwpress.com. If you want inspiration, you're looking at redoing your website. I think this is, it's just such a great layout. First of all, how did you do this background image thing? The disco ball looks like in the back of a shop somewhere. Is this a video? Is this AI?
That's actually, yeah, it's a video posted to Vimeo that this is all in Squarespace. So, I work with my buddy, Bill. He has a design company called Bootstrap Design. And I can never do my own stuff. You know, it's like forest through the trees. And he laid all this stuff. And then I jump in and start changing stuff. And it's real fun to butt heads with him. But the cool story on that disco ball is like when we redid our warehouse in 2017, like this thing was condemned. There was no power, no water, nothing. And the guy had, you know, our electrician, hey, Keaton, thank you. Had this, you know, he's like, you're going to have 45 switches, but we have this program that'll do anything you want. And so he goes, just tell me what you want. And me just being straight up, I was like, man, you mean if I hit one button, it would kill all the lights and a disco ball would start spinning? And he was just like, he's like military. He's like, yeah, I could do that. And he never said another word about it. And 1 year later, he showed me all the stuff and there's a button that says party on it. And you hit it, all the lights go out in the warehouse and that thing starts spinning. So it's awesome. Ridiculous.
How often does that get hit?
Not as much anymore because every time I do it, the printers want to kill me. Like, because it's, you know, they're in the middle of work and all of a sudden it's like, poof, you know, it's like, sons of bitch, you know.
Do you get leads? So you've got the website, you click, let's get started. It goes to this quote page. You know, you've got questions like, when do you need your order by? Are you new or you're returning? Name, address, what type of items you want, sizes you want, you know. A fair amount of questions here and then upload right at the bottom.
It's overwhelming.
Is this like, do you get new customers that come through here organically or are you driving people to this who say, hey, I'm interested in the job, but they need to fill out all the information. What is the purpose for this one?
Most of our orders come through that, surprisingly, but it even says like on there, just give us anything. Because in order, like, and I always say, like, in order for us to do an order, we have to have all this information anyway. And so if you can give us as much as you can up front, we'll get it quicker. You know, the order will go through quicker. So I put that up there with a hope that that people, you know, just go through it. And we're starting to do a thing where we're going to have two different options of people who already know how to place an order and people who need their handheld. But this has been an issue for a while now. And I actually have an interview at 3:30 today with Inksoft because now we've been building this software on the side that will help us do this. But then the new update for Inksoft does a lot of this in it. So I'm going to see if it actually does what they say it does. Cause it sounds amazing.
So Dan, like, and for listeners, like how big is your shop? Just so people give us your gun show real quick. What, how many autos, like how many employees?
We've got two autos. There's, including my wife and I, who are the owners, there's 14 employees. And we've got a 20,000 square foot warehouse, which I'm pretty stoked about, like right in the city here in Pittsburgh.
So so pretty substantial. Like how many leads do you think actually come through this a day, if you were to guess?
I mean, in the summer, like it's slammed, you know, we have two people hitting it all the time. But I mean, today there might be 20, 30.
Wow. Are you paying
a month, a day,
or a day? You're getting 20 leads a day. So are, how are you driving people to the site? Is there, do you guys send out emails? Are you paying for ads? Like, do people just search you? Do you index well?
Yeah, Commonwealth Press has existed for 22 years. So everything that we do has been word of mouth. So we have some really big customers that are just constant with us. And then we do everything, you know, our minimum runs are low, and we work with, you know, a lot of, you know, start out with like printing for bands, and then just, so it goes everywhere from like smaller ones to.
Oh, that's interesting.
So if you search Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania screen printing as well, you're number three right on the top. And as far as the Google Maps, and then you're number one as far as responses, like as a looking for screen printing.
That's just because we're old.
But you've done something good there. There's something there, and there's a reason that that's working. Because like, I think there's a myth. A lot of shops think they can just build a website with a form and just like magically people will come. You have to, it sounds like your SEO is really strong. You've got hundreds of Google reviews. You've got like obviously good word of mouth. I think it's, to be able to get that many leads a day, it means you're doing something special for sure. Did you
purposely do that? Like improve the website to be SEO driven to get all these leads like Steven is saying?
No, this is just
interesting.
We started out, like I said, it's been going for so long, but everything we've done has just been like completely community minded. So we're trying to get our name out there just by, you know, I always say that like, if you like what we did, tell everybody else. If you didn't, like, we'll take care of it, like bar none. So like our repeat, we have, you know, some of our customers from 2002 are still with us. You know, I think my first two employees, you know, so it's like, we're trying to build a thing that's like.
So Dan, whether you have this number or not, how many of your customers do you think are repeat customers versus like net new? Like, oh, I've never seen that name before versus like, oh yeah, that's them.
It surprises me to see like how many people do those. Cause like I'll do anything and just be talking with someone and they're like, oh, what do you do? I'm like, I work for a print shop. And they're like, which one? And I'll say Commonwealth Press. And like, people will know who we are. So, yeah, there's definitely new people that have never worked here, and it's like, or worked with us, but we have, you know, a little section when you're clicking in, you can actually say, have you worked with us before? Cause I wanted to track like how are you finding us? And
Yeah. No, I saw that. So it says, quote info, are you a new or returning customer? I'm a new customer, or come on, I've been here before. Kind of funny. But I think there's a big miss in our industry of like just getting new customers is harder than just working on your existing customer base. Does everyone agree with that?
Sure.
Like, you second the motion. It is more expensive to try and get a new person on the street that's never heard of you before to work with you than it is to just work with people that have worked with you before, right? And so I think in our industry, we have great word of mouth. People just kind of keep coming back. But what would happen if you really put out a plan for customer retention? Like, what I mean by that is some of these bigger companies, all they focus on is taking a customer that orders twice a year and getting them to order four times a year, right? Like, do you do anything for your customers, for your, like, just naturally that starts to happen that is kind of part of that experience? Is there anything that keeps customers coming back that's special?
I mean, I would like to say the thing that's special, this sounds like ridiculous, but it's us. It's the way that we approach our jobs and the work and the relationship, because like this whole thing is, you guys know, this is all relationship based. So, you know, as far as like seeking out more orders from same people, you know, every once in a while we'll post something to social media, like, you know, right now we're real slow. Who needs whatever? But as far as like trying to work a customer to place an order that they weren't planning on doing it's not something that we focus on. Plus I don't have any, like, I'm the only salesperson and I don't do sales, so it's hard for me to hey man, you want some shirts?
Now Dan, there's something unique about your shop is that you are a union shop, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, can we dig into that a little bit, because that I think is very, very unique. when did you decide to do that? Like, tell us that backstory a little bit.
Well, this is so the, I also have to clarify, like, usually when a union exists, it's because the employees felt like they were being mistreated and they needed more than what they were getting. And that's not what happened here. So I want to clarify that from the get-go. And I do that like with new job interviews and everything too, because what actually happened, like, I mean, I grew up in a union household. Like, I'm in Western Pennsylvania. So it's like all of our dads were, you know, my dad worked the gas line, my uncle's at the mines and stuff. So it was just something you always heard about. And you just were raised knowing that they're watching out for the workers, you know? And so whenever we started this company, my wife and I were just trying to be like, you know, I always want to be proud of the company I own or want to have worked for this company. And so we were trying to be like, well, what makes a company good for the people that work there or for the, you know, to be included? And we started to use union standard as what to do for the people that worked here. So, you know, as soon as we could afford it, you know, our first employee, which is Corey. What's up, Corey? I'm going to make him watch this. So I just want to say hi to him, but,
hi Corey.
He's from my hometown too. I grew up in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. So like groundhog stuff and all that. But, whenever we started having employees, we were like, well, what would we want them to have? So it's like, we started with, you know, try to figure out what we could pay as soon as we could get to 15. That's where we want to start. And this was years ago. And then we went to healthcare. What can we do for healthcare? How can we afford and find out how to give us all healthcare? Because it's something we needed as owners, but also if we can get it, can they? And then we took that into retirement plan. And then we learned how to do retirement plus matching. So it's like these things that we're doing, it's trying to like make it the best possible place that we can, because it's not that thing that like nobody wants to work. It's like, man, if we could make work something cool that you're good at doing, put the time in that you need to time and then go home and have your own life, that's kind of what we're looking for, you know, for everybody. So,
so to clarify, Dan, it's not like so before you even thought about forming, like having the union formed or whatever, and we'll have to get to that, you're just like, what are union standards? And that's what I'm going to set my standard of excellence at. Right. And so whether or not you have a union stamp, like this is what we're just going to do because out of the like livelihood of your staff and just making a good experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's like, we want this place to be like, we want people to be stoked to work here. And then later down the road, a really good friend of mine is in a couple organizations that he was quoting off these huge jobs. And, we, you know, sometimes we get one, but like the majority of them, I wouldn't hear from him again. And one day I was just asking like, where are those jobs going? And he goes, oh, we need them. They need to have a union bug on them. And I was like, man, we're a mom and pop. Isn't that cool? And he's like, yeah, but it has to have a union bug. This is what that represents. And I was like, well, who are we losing them to? You know, like, and he goes, oh, we got a shop up in, I think it was Massachusetts. And I was like, so all these huge jobs for Pittsburgh are going to Massachusetts. And he's like, yeah. I was like, that's messed up. So I started looking at like, so I really did. It took me probably about a year because I was like, you know, really looking into unionizing and like just how dumb it is of an owner to do it. But like I started looking into it and it really comes down to like, these are the things we offer and these are the things that that would cause a problem. And it's like, we already offer all that. So I actually reached out to the local rep. We're part of the CWA, and I was talking to him on the phone and I was telling him, hey, we want to unionize. And he's like, well, how many of you want to do it? I was like, it's the whole shop. And he goes, no way. That's awesome. Well, listen, you guys got to be real careful, because if your owner finds out or the supervisors find out, you could lose your job. And I was like, well, man, I'm the owner. And he goes, he got quiet for a second. He's like, why would you do that?
Are you punking me?
He stopped. He's like, why would you do that?
He said, call me on my other line. Call me on my other line. Why are you doing that?
He goes, why would you do that? And I was like, well, where do you get your shirts printed? And it was just quiet, you know? And I was like, I mean, if you had a local union opportunity, would you support that? And he's like, hell yeah. You know? So it's been slow because unions move slow. And so, you know, big organizations, but it's like, it's been really cool because from that point forward, we started off with a great relationship with the union reps. So I am also a member of the union, of our union. I'm a non-voting member. On the phone too, he goes, man, you could lose control of your shop. And I was like, I don't have control of my shop, man. These guys do whatever they want. But all joking aside, it was like, we're already meeting what you need. What else could you want? And I mean, it was bumpy, you know, it took us about another year to ratify the contract but I think all in all, it's really cool because our people have a vested interest in what happens at our shop. And like, it's really laid out things that we try to do anyway, but it's really laid out a method of how things happen. And just there's put some structure to it that I didn't have before, which was really cool.
This is a great conversation. And very coincidentally, did an episode last week with Dawn Eddings at E2 Embroidery, which you guys can watch. And she's running a union shop as well. Came from a union family. So very similar story. She's out of Kansas City. She mentioned one of the, you know, she really enjoys kind of rising tides, all tides together. And that's, you know, she's like, I love seeing people come to work and they've got a car and they've got insurance and they're being able to taken care of, which is great. Now, I want to get a little bit deeper with you on the pros and cons, because this is a bit of a different perspective. It sounds like pros may be you get access to some different jobs here. Like, you know, the jobs that you talked about that were getting sent to Massachusetts, maybe now you can handle. What about the price? Is the pricing way better, or because there's only a select amount of people that can do this work? What's that like?
Yeah. I mean, it hasn't changed our pricing that much, except for, you know, like the annual increases that we have to do anyway.
What annual increase do you do?
I mean, you cost of living, like every year we gauge what the cost of living based on the interest rates are. And then the cost of living has to increase your pricing to reflect what ink has gone up and what your
inflation raises. Yeah.
Yeah. Just all of it. So like our costs, I mean, your costs go up every year. So if you're not adjusting your pricing rates,
many shops don't adjust.
Oh, I didn't either for a long time. And you'd watch those numbers start to dip and you're like, well, where are we screwing up? And then you realize
when you started the union, is that what kicked this in?
No, we'd been doing it for a while. But it really, like, there was a noticeable change whenever things start, not from the union, but just like post COVID and these other things where it's like, well, if you're not keeping up with the cost, your costs are, you know, if your cost is here and all your costs are rising, you start to look at it and you're like, damn, we're like a 3% profit margin. What the hell's going on? You know, you're like, oh, well, that's why.
5% of inflation over 4 years is there's a profit. What were you gonna say, Bruce?
You
know?
But the jobs, right? So would you say that you can bid for these jobs at a higher per piece price, or let's just say maybe average order value price, or, you know, like, is it more financially beneficial to get access to this work?
It's not that it's financially, because you technically by law, you're not allowed to increase your pricing just because you're printing for a union. Like, I can't say this band gets it for $5 and this union gets it for $8. Like, the price is the price. But what it does is it opens up a door that most people can't touch in a local area.
Because unions buy from unions. I mean,
back unions. And I mean, like, this, so we just, I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. No, keep going.
The even as simple as something like, you know, during this past presidential campaign, there were 5 union shops in the country fulfilling these orders, and we were one of them. You know, so it was like,
so you get access to that, but that has to be good for pricing, yeah. Then, right? For you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, like on the side, you know, for our distribution and all that stuff. Yeah, but prices are going up no matter what. So, but it's always like we're not like constantly 3% rate. You know, it's always like, you know, in line with what.
But it's a really easy sell, right? And so I imagine, is most of your work coming from union-backed companies or?
No.
No?
No, it's not. And here's the thing that's crazy about that is like, because the union, like because we can print for unions and it's great for us and it really has, like I said, it's opened some doors. It's still less than 5% of our business, I would say. But what it has done is it's allowed other people to know, once we did this, word has really spread and it's like, I'm not trying to walk around being like, hey, you should use this because we're good guys. Like, but it's legitimately like, I think people want to know who's making their stuff. And like we're a local shop. I'm rarely going for, you know, anything outside of Pittsburgh. I'll take it. You know, we do it. We ship all over the place, but it's like, we're aiming for our community and our people and all this other stuff. And it's been really cool to like see that reaction. So I think that even people that aren't in unions want union bugs, because it shows like they're like, they love that this is made in the US and they love that this was made in the city. And so it's like that feeling of who we are and why we're doing it, I think carries across.
You know, what's really interesting is, because like you said, how many union shops do you union screen printing shops do you think there are in the United States?
Oh, there's tons, but like for screen printing, there's very few of them, but I know that there were like about five that were doing fulfillment. So
that makes you much more valuable, because you're unique in a commoditized industry, right? And so like, you know, it's also similar, like in my world, to the licensing space, right? People will ask us, you know, what about your competitors? And it's like, well, because we've jumped through every hoop of licensing, because, you know, we do all the FLA stuff and audits and we have the licenses, the schools don't just grant people more licenses. And so we can then get preference, and it's called like, we say that's called defensibility in business, is how is your business defensible? And the more defensible your business is, the more you've built a moat around it. And when you built a moat around it, it becomes more value, like more valuable, right? Bruce, are you tracking?
I think so. That makes sense.
Yeah. And
what
so
about
that's,
a, oh, no, sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Steven.
No, go ahead.
Sorry. I keep actually cutting you off because I wrote down way too many things. What's another, so this other pro, you mentioned that your team has a vested interest in the shop. What does that mean exactly? Like as far as the voting aspects or like, what's an example of that?
Well, I mean, like whenever, this is kind of a crazy example, but like whenever we are allowed to add, like vision and dental to our healthcare, I brought it to a vote. It was like, who wants vision and dental? Here's what it would, you know, cost. Because the main thing is that everything we do for the company costs money that then comes out of whatever the profit margins will be. So if we want to add vision and dental, it'll take this much, but you know, in the end it's minimal.
Wait, why do they care about the profit margin? Is there some sharing thing?
I mean, it's something that like, yeah, the profit margins are what we're aiming to hit so that we can, I don't want to say grow, but like any ability for us to give raises or.
Gotcha. Okay. Wasn't sure if there's like a bonus pool or something like that, but yeah, that makes sense on the caring about it. What about the con though of the lost control, right? When you get on the phone with a guy just to learn about it before he's like, whoa, you know, don't tell the owner. That would scare me. In that, like, okay, these decisions are now vote based. Is there an example of a time that it didn't go your way from a vote?
Well, it's rare that local put, like, cause we still have, like, we have a management clause and we can run, you know, things how we need to run them for the business. But a lot of it just comes down to math. Like, and I mean this, like, I want to give the union everything we can, you know, like, I want us all to, like, because this is the hardest part for me to fathom, is that I am a part of the union. So I take my benefits from that as well. But I am also the owner of the company that has to balance out what the union wants. So my wife is 50% owner and she always says like, everything's math. It's just math. So like when we're, you know, we'll be talking about, you know, this, our contract's up this year. So we'll be negotiating that, and it's like it'll just come down to math, like what can the company afford without pricing ourselves out of screen printing, and also make it better for all of us, because you know this was just something she and I were doing in my basement, you know, and then it got bigger and bigger and we had kids and are like, hey, is this working, you know, and then we bring in employees and they're buying houses and they're having kids and it's like, holy crap, this is working, you know. And so I want it to continue to work, and it's I don't know, man. It's awesome to see that.
Does this help you with recruiting?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does. Like we're hiring right now for our customer service position, and I posted it last week. And I think we had, within the first 2 days, we had probably 20 or 30 applicants, and five of them that I right off the bat had the experience that I need. So like they could hit the ground and just go, rather than like in the past, we've had to train them from the ground up. And like, so it's, I think it says a lot for our interview process, but also like our reputation. And, you know, it's flattering to see, like, cause you, every time you post it, like, I'm like, ah, is this going to work? And then all of a sudden you start getting emails like, oh, that's awesome. And then talk with people like, do you know this person? They used to work at this shop. I'm like, oh yeah, they're great. It's
interesting. And so do you feel like at CW, like, do you have a lot of employee turnover, or do you feel like you've got this core group that's been there for a minute?
We definitely have a core group, and then some have some turnover to it. But yeah, like I said, our production manager, I think he's on pushing 19 years now, you know, and like I've got guys. Yeah. So it's not, you know, we're not all making, you know, $1 million a year, but it's, you know, we're earning a living, and it's fair. And it's a good way of doing it. I feel like it.
Wow. Wow. Sounds like you run a happy shop. What's your, can we talk about you seem like a very relaxed individual, which you seem very chill. What's your like work-life balance like after doing this for 20 some years? Are you in the shop every day? Like tell us about that.
But it's when my wife, so I was doing this for before I started the business. And my wife, I conned her into helping. Like she's a classical musician. And we were living in Virginia, and I dragged her back to Pittsburgh. I conned her into work, and I was like, look, here's what you're doing now. If you did this, you're making less than minimum wage. If you were doing this, like, you know, and so we started figuring out how to like do that. And I remember one day when she first started working from home, my office was upstairs and our press was in the basement. I was walking down and like, when I got to the living room, she was sitting on the couch and like got up and starts looking around. And I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, I just feel like I got busted. And I was like, for what? And she goes, I'm just watching TV. And I was like, your life is your work now. It doesn't matter. You know, like we have to do this. We have to do this job by Thursday. That's it. You know, and it was so weird to balance that out, to realize like, it doesn't matter anymore. You know, like my Tuesdays are the same as my Saturdays. And it's so like work-life balance has changed kind of the way I see it, because like once we got this warehouse, like I said, it was decimated. And I love working on this. So like towards the end of it, I was the general contractor, and it's just like, I can come down here and clean and build something or make a room, do something, or like redefine the flow of the and enjoy it.
But like, Dan, so, if you just didn't come into the shop for 3 days, would everything still run?
Yeah. Like last week I told Corey, again, the production manager, I told him like my brain's fizzling. I've had, you know, some stuff at the beginning of the year, like some friends, parents passing, and just like stuff. I got to get out of here. And he's like, say it, you know? And I just went off into the woods with some friends for like 3 days, come back. And the thing is, it's like, I've gotten to a point where I bring in projects and I have special projects that I'm working on, but the day to day, that's all them. And I truly enjoy like pissing around like I am.
What would you say is your role shop wise then? Like, do you handle certain key accounts then, or?
Yeah. I'm like the old guy on the mountain that just sits there and like people will come and ask a question like for something that doesn't apply anymore.
But like there's still someone that's going to answer your emails. Like the business will still run whether you're there or not. And so you put people in position. Are there like critical components in the business that you must touch, like finance, HR, things that like no one else can do?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'll do the face-to-face HR, a lot of the on-site things. My wife, Shannon, she's moved her office to the house. We have two kids. So she works strictly from there, but she is all numbers, finances, you know, like any HR issues she'll handle. But, and she's just the way her brain works. She's like a classical musician, and apparently like music and numbers are the same to people like that. So she's brilliant, man. Because we do stuff with the city and the state and like different campaigns and stuff, we've been federally audited like 3 or 4 different times. And I've watched her prove federal agents wrong 3 different times. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it's like, it's just crazy how she gets it. So in fact, like maybe, I don't know, it's a couple months ago. She goes, if you never met me, you think you'd still be doing Commonwealth Press? And I was like, yeah, but I'd probably still be in the basement. You know, like she just, like I'm a bulldozer and she's in the back, like, all right, this works. This doesn't work. And that's,
so. One thing you talked about when we were catching up was having a very profitable year and just being very efficient, working less hours. What do you mean by that? And how do you think that happened?
Around the time that we were, like, right when we first unionized, I took on another project of just like studying. It's mostly like Scandinavian countries where they have the 4-day work week, not like 4-10s, but a traditional 4-day work week. It's like you work less hours, but you still get paid the same. And it sounds
like 4-8s or 4.
Yeah. Yeah. Like they work for, so a lot of it is office work. So it's, you know, it's easy, but within manufacturing, production, you know, fabrication, you know, you're handing a piece to someone that they have to be there to take it. So it's like, it's weirder to do it in this environment. So I start looking at like the parameters of how this works and how could we actually institute a 4-day work week, and came up with some ideas and sat down with everyone. And we talked through some different scenarios of how it could work, but took about a year of like really like, and the thing is like really getting your numbers together of just what does it cost to exist? And then here's your profit margins. What profit margins are you aiming for? And then we set, you know, okay, so here's a fair number. Here's where we can profit. Here's what we're going to do. And then last year we put it on April 1st. Like just isn't like, we just picked it because it's the quarter, but it's also April Fool's Day. We started doing 4-9s. So we do 4-9s. And if everything was online and we hit, like I had set up benchmarks that if we hit them, everything was done by Friday, everyone gets Friday off. And 4 of those hours are paid and 4 of them are just because you worked, you know, 36 hours. So this year on April 1st, we're going to do a true 4-day. So it'll be 8 hours, 32 paid at 40. And that starts on April 1st. But like last year going through it, it was like, yes. But then when you start really looking at it, it's like part of the, you have to have complete buy-in. The whole shop has to realize like, that downtime that you're like, you know, people sitting on their phones or whatever, like just get rid of that. And one of the benchmarks is also like, if you catch up with your stuff, go help somebody do theirs. You know, there's no real time to, and I'm not saying like run, but like, just don't piss around, you know? So, and one of the other benchmarks is our customers can't be affected. They can't, like for them, they shouldn't know any different whatsoever. So we offset it from, you know, part of our shift will work Monday to Thursday and we have the other ones work Tuesday to Friday, you know, full shift. So like phones are always answered. People are always here. And you know, like with the results I was reading from the tests that were done at, you know, the one was in Norway, the other was again in New Zealand. They're saying you can expect like 8-12% inefficiency rates and stuff. And we were recording everything. Like,
sorry, I just want to pause. Can you explain again just the pay aspect of it? So if they work 32 hours, you saying you pay for 40, or how does that part work? And then go back, because I want to keep going on what else you measure.
So it's essentially they work 40 hours no matter what. So if you're working like right now, it's 36 hours. You're still paid for 40 with that day off. This one that it's coming up, it'll be 8 hours, or you know, 32 hours. You're still paid at 40. So we're just marking that as essentially like a bonus, a weekly bonus. So
it's almost like you're salarying them at 40 hours and saying we're only working 4 days, right? Like,
salarying, because they're non-exempt. So it's like if we had overtime, all that stuff, it's still there.
Interesting. So talk to us about, you started tracking everything and benchmarking it because you did a lot of research. Talk to us about how you were tracking it. Did you ever have to lay down the hammer and be like, sorry, we didn't get our work done, we're coming in tomorrow? Tell us about the actual implementation of it.
Well, we have company meetings. We have, you know, production meetings every week. And then we have company meetings once a month. And the hype up too, it was like, here's the benchmarks. And then we have to redefine the benchmarks as we're going. Like, you know, everyone has to be on time. It's not like if you're late, you're fired, but it's like, you know, if you start at 8, be there at 8. And it's like, we have to hit our numbers by Thursday. Place has to be clean. You know, just stuff like that. All the shipping has to be shipped. It's just, it's real basic things. And the beauty of that is it like it takes away it takes away the management of like, why aren't you on time? Why aren't you, you know, because it's like, that's not my style. You know, like if you say you're going to be here at 8, be here at 8. But like the buy-in then becomes like, if somebody's like constantly half hour late, sorry guys, we got to work Friday this week. And so everyone's like, dude, you know, so.
So Dan, like there's lots of different like business playbooks, HR playbooks, traction, you know, all of these different things, profit first, you know, four hour work weeks, 4 day work weeks. You know, one of the things that I've always learned is you have to have an integrator that really champions it and gets it to stick. Even with like Lean Six Sigma and all these different things, like we introduced Traction at Campus Inc. and I couldn't integrate it. Our CFO had to, because he's way more disciplined and consistent. When you implemented this, was it you, your wife? Did you have another employee that was like, you're going to be running this and tracking it? How did you make sure that this was successful? Because I think a lot of shops want to do this. And I think in theory, it makes sense, but the actual how seems like it needs to be done thoughtfully. So like, who was that champion? Was it you?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, we just put everything into play or these things need to be met. And if they're not, we report, you know, like, so if our numbers are below, it's like, you know, and within the company, our numbers are transparent. So they can look and be like, oh crap, we need to hit this. We need to move, you know? So it's not something that there's never any curtain over anything or something like that. It's just, I mean, he's been late 4 times this week. Are you okay? You know, first, like, are you okay? Is there anything going on? And then also like, come on, man, you know, like, and so everything that is a benchmark is you can visibly see it or you can track it, you know? So, and then a lot of the other things that we were doing just to be able to measure these things to make sure that, like, cause even when you're doing it, you're like, is this going to work? So we have, you know, a bunch of forms that we'll fill out that dump to spreadsheets. So we'll start to see like, is this holding water, you know, which is the big fear.
What are the measurements? So you talked about customers can't be affected as one. What are the, like, as many that you can think of that's listed that you're trying to measure day to day to make sure that people can have off that fifth day?
And we redefine it as we go. So like, if we look through, it's like, you know, you have to hit the weekly goal, which keeps us around, you know, we're aiming for a certain percent of profit. Everyone has to work their hours, you know, whether it's vacation or, you know, whatever. We have to keep our turnaround time under, you know, 15 business days. All overtime has to be approved or laid out, because the whole thing is like, if we're giving us 4 free hours, those extra hours are absorbed into overtime. So like, if you have to stay an extra hour to get it done, that's just part of it, you know. But if you have to stay 5 hours, now there's an extra overtime. Why did that happen? And how do we mismanage that? So, cleanliness of the shop, you know, being at work on time, everything that, can be shipped is shipped. Like, we don't miss deadlines. And then any emails that come in are cleared within 24 hours.
The profitability part, is that just based on we hit a sales goal and the cogs to it or something?
Well, yeah, we have all of our numbers figured out for the year of like what we need to exist, to turn on the lights, and then variables. Like, so if you want to hit, say like, it'd be awesome. Something, you know, the crap about screen printing is like, you know, 50% of your dollars go into a garment. You know, so like, right. So you're aiming like for this part, and then you start whittling. Yeah. So you start whittling that away, and it's like, well, what's a fair number for us to hit, still be profitable, and then move forward as, you know, living well for all of us.
And then how does this go back? So I guess the thing I'm stuck on is that if people are working less and still getting the same amount done, which is amazing, how does that go back to being having the most profitable year though, right? Because it sounds like the overhead cost is still the same.
Well, it's so much more efficient. It sounds ridiculous, but like whenever, and this isn't examples from the shop, but if you look at like the some of the examples they give in some of these studies, is like there's so much downtime of people like either visibly screwing around or killing time or whatever. And it's like, it's not as much of that in our shop, but once you start to see it, it's like, well, listen, let's all just, instead of, you know, getting X amount out, like how are we setting the press up and tearing the press down? So we start looking at that. Like if we can shave some time off of that, like we've got, so now it kind of runs like a little pit crew, you know, and nobody's running, but it's just, it's less like I shouldn't walk out and see, I shouldn't see like one person on an auto, you know, like, because that's just like, if there's two people running two autos, they're just being done inefficiently. But if you took those two people on the same auto, it's exponentially faster. So you could get three jobs done instead of two, or, you know, something.
Your throughputs. So if we did this a little bit, we studied how often our press was off, not spinning. And I believe it was almost like, we, you know, our average job size, like we're 75 to 150 pieces. And so we have lots of setups and teardowns. But it was like in an 8-hour day, our press was only spinning for 4 hours. If you could take that 4 hours of spin time at 300 pieces an hour, and you could just get it to 5 hours by being a little more conscious, like, hey, let's just make sure our press downtime isn't outrageous. That hour makes up an extra job, right? And everything runs more efficiently. And so like I think that's what you're saying is businesses that actually adopted this in the whole Scandinavian study actually became 8 to 10% more efficient because they were consciously thinking about throughput, teamwork, helping each other out, not being late, right? Like there's a psychology, I think, to it, Bruce, that's like a complete paradigm shift of, hey, we've got to be here till Friday. You know, the story that I think of is a team that's like, we got to be here till Friday at 5 o'clock. So how long can we make this week last to get to Friday at 5 o'clock, right? Versus we can have Friday off. How efficiently can we make this week, right? So like, there's this entire shift, this mindset
shift. It's a psychological shift. That's crazy.
Totally.
The whole thing is it's a complete different way of thinking. So like the buy-in is what took the longest time is like, you know, because the second that you pitch it, you get the same reaction. Like that's not going to work. So whenever you're talking to the people that you're working with, it's like, how's that possible? It's like, well, let's try this. And I'm not asking anything more than just to try this, you know? And then you start to ask them like, what else do you think could be more efficient? Like, could this be in a different place? Like that changes this. Is that, you know,
that's this continuous improvement adoption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it psychologically gets the whole team on the same page, right? Because the motive, right. The incentives, right? They're like, be careful what you incentivize. Well, this incentive is that I'm getting paid and don't have to be there. And everyone can rally around that one.
52 days a year.
Right.
So you're good. So on top of, so like we've got, you know, they start with 2 weeks. We start with people with 2 weeks vacation. You get 5 health days. You've got 10 holidays. And then on top of that, if we do this right, you're going to get, you know, 52 days off paid. So it sounds too good to be true, but it's like it, when it's working, it's unbelievable. You know, I've worked in some sweatshops, man. And it's like, this is not that. I'm not asking anyone to like sprint. It's just,
you know, what's interesting, Dan, as I talked to a lot of shop owners, everyone looks at their employees as a cost on a line item, right? I think you look at it as an investment, which I think is just like this different shift that you think about it as. People are like, oh, you know, I don't have to pay for insurance yet. I'm lucky, right? Or, oh, I don't have to do 401k or, oh, we only give, you know, after a year, they get a week where you're like, no, I'm going to invest in them, their livelihood, their well-being, give them a nice place to work and a good culture. And then I'm going to empower them to make this place better. And I think shops listening to this could take a lot out of that. And say like, you know, invest in your people because they're super
important.
And
that's it. And these half of them, you know, like there are people that I, you know, that have worked here that only have ever been to this warehouse. But most of these dudes, these are my dudes. I've been with these guys forever, you know. But like I've listened to some of this and it's like, we have Pizza Friday or, you know, something like that. And it's like, that's cool. But like it's more on like you don't ever have to, you know, like you don't ever have to pay more than minimum wage. Like, but what is that doing for your people and your reputation and your output and like just the way you feel about yourself? Once you start to invest in that and you start to see like, we can all do this, you know, like, and once you get that buy-in, and it's like the one thing that I've had to overcome, especially with new people, there's two things. And I always say like the agreement, the basic agreement for me and you to work together is we have to both agree that time is the most invaluable thing that we both have, like bar none. Like, and I want you to, when you're here, like we have an agreement, you'll be here for this long. Like, just do what I'm asking, do what you need to do, be the best that you can be so that you can get out of here and do whatever you want, you know? And so like, once you realize how valuable that is, and then the worst part, and this took me, like, I just discovered this last year, but I am every boss that everyone has ever had. You know, like they're putting things on me that I'm not, you know, they're, you know, I'll walk by someone and they'll be like, you jump in to do something. I'm like, I don't care what you're doing. Just if I have a complaint, you'll know, you know, like, because I'm watching like what has to go out. But like, you know, if you're jumping like that, go help somebody out. But like that thing of like, you know, people come in instantly, and I'm not saying here, but in general, just like, screw the company, you know, because they've been mistreated, and I'm trying not to do that. And so it takes a while to get that across. It's like, man, I just want this to be cool. And,
you know, what's interesting. We don't have, so what's interesting at Campus Inc. is we have some younger employees that it was like their first job out of college. And so, you know, you don't expect them to work there forever. But one thing that I think about is, when your employees go home every day, either to their roommate or their spouse or partner, do they complain about work and just bitch about it and say, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this. I got a, you know, buddy, and every day he'd come home and complain about work. And so when he's like, I think I want to get another job, I'm like, go for it. So I don't have to hear about this anymore. Right. And so, you know, if you can think about your employees going home and saying, like, work was solid today, like, we have tomorrow off. Yeah, like we're being taken care of. Yeah, it was hard as hell. And your spouse can advocate, or your partner can advocate for you. Like, you know, you're doing your job right. And I think that's the ultimate test, is what do the partners of your employees think about you? And that is the true, like, you know, kind of temperature check. But I notice, you know, employees that leave, usually their partners have a big influence on it. And it's probably because they are complaining to them every single day about it. You know, Steven did this today, Steve, you know, whatever.
You know what I like doing is involving the significant, I forget where I read this, but it was that your team is, you're with your team more than they are with their significant other. And so if you involve the significant other, you can lean on them more and the other person isn't complaining as much. So it's like, Bruce asked me to like to help get this feature done. Sorry, I got to work on it after dinner. And, you know, wife or husband, whoever is like, oh yeah, that's not bad. Like, it's okay. You know, I like him. And so that relationship helps and extends. Did you say that? I can't remember. I can't remember where I read that, but I definitely think it's important.
Chinese proverb.
And something that we try, like that I'll tell people too during interviews, and I've said it, like, cause you always hear like, oh, we're a family. I'm very clear to be like, listen, this is not a family. Like, we're a team. It's very different. Like, we're not like some of your family you're stuck with, some of you don't have to, like, and this is something I've talked with my daughter about. She started a rugby team in her high school, and, you know, was talking about some of the people she was playing with. I was like, you don't have to be friends with everybody, but you have to be teammates. Teammates have the same goal. So like, if you do well, they do well. So you don't have to like put this facade of a family on there, because that's a whole other thing and it's misleading. But like, when you're like, this is literally a team and here's the goal that we're aiming for, it kind of changes that conversation a little bit.
That's interesting. I've heard your employees don't have to like you, but they need to trust you, you know, like we don't have to.
Yeah, and each other. Right. Each other, you know, right. It's like, that's the worst thing is trying to manage, like, cause you know, we're a small shop, but I don't want to get big. I want to be strong. And so like, when there's a conflict between two of them, it's like, you got to suss it out. Cause like that spreads instantly. And it's.
Damn. That's actually a good way to vet team members in a way, right? Do you trust them to get the work done? And if not, can you build that trust? And then if not, maybe it's not the best fit. I don't know if you're purposely doing this, but there is a law of what you're like a theoretical law of what you're doing in your business, Dan. It's called Parkinson's Law, which is work expands to fill the time allotted for its completion. So, you know, it's like, as an owner, I think we've all been here where you have to leave. Let's say you have to, because you have a flight. So you have to leave the business by 2 p.m. Somehow you end up getting the things that you need to get done are done because you must leave. And if not, and if, you know, you're like, well, you know, I don't know, don't have much to do tonight, so I'll just keep sitting here. You could be sitting there till 8 and just dilly-dallying around for 4 hours. Yeah,
the day before vacations are the most efficient.
I did not know that there was... I didn't know that there was a name to it, but yeah, I completely subscribe to that. And I also believe, like, you grow to the size of your building, kind of like a goldfish. Because when we got this warehouse, man, I was like, we'll never fill that. We're getting... And now it's just like... But it's the same thing, but...
This is really cool.
Thank you, Dan. Hey, this is Dan Rue at Commonwealth Press. Dan, if people had questions for you, what's the best way to reach out?
Dan at cwpress.com.
All right. You got it there live. They also run a really great Instagram at cwpress. You guys can check that out. Thank you, Dan, again. Print Hustlers, you know the drill. We appreciate you guys. We'll see you guys next week. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.